Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Necessary Roughness Podcast, episode number 111, presented by Last Word on Sports. As always, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all are excited for week one. We finally made it. I've been hyping it up for weeks. I know you guys have been excited out there, and I hope you got, you know, into the mood. If you weren't in the mood from that opening game, tight game between Tampa Bay and Dallas, we'll touch on that in a sec. Gonna keep the standout seven format from last year and the year before and the year before. If you're new around here, quick run through of about usually seven topics, maybe a little less, maybe six. Might do six this episode. And then we'll get right into the pick'em portion of the episode. It's everyone's favorite part of the show. But first, we are recording this episode on the 20th anniversary of the September 11th attacks, and I just wanted to put it at the outset of the show, send my condolences to anyone who might have had a relative who passed away in the attacks or in the aftermath of the attacks with all the diseases and conditions due to the things that were in the air in New York City or in other locations on 9/11. You know, if you've been around, you know I'm born and bred in New York City, so it hits close to home. It's just one of those things, and I... If you have any relatives or if you have yourself have served in the war or in Operation Enduring Freedom or some of those things, thank you so much for your service. If you have relatives that passed away, I'm sorry for your loss, and thank you for their service. And it's something that's, you know, it's not the topic of the show. We know that. We don't, and we being me, I try not to delve into certain things, but with it being the 20th anniversary of such a historic date, in the history of our country and in the history of the city that I know and love, I feel obligated to put it out there. And like I said, thank you so much if you've served. And if you lost someone, I can't imagine what that was like. And I'm going to try and do my best to bring a little bit of levity to your day on the 20th anniversary of one of the darkest days in the history of our nation. So, sorry to start the show off on a somber note, but it had to be said as we delve in on September the 11th, 2021. I'll try my best to pick up the pace. We'll keep it, you know, as light and airy as we can, like I said, but it had to be said. So let's jump in to the standout seven. Let's try to shift gears as best you can. It's always hard. And start talking some football. So, week one started this past Thursday, September the 9th. Dallas heads down to Tampa and quite honestly put up more of a fight than I expected. If you watched last week's episode, or listened rather, you would know that I had Tampa winning that game. It's not exactly a bold prediction to pick the Super Bowl champion to win the home opener to start the year. It happens almost every season. I think there's maybe one or two in recent memory where the defending champion did not start 1-0 with a nice home victory, you know, get some momentum. In this one, we see two picks out of Brady, one of them not his fault, just kind of a before halftime thing. The other, not so much. The before halftime one was an intriguing one, and, you know, I take my notes during these games, because it was really a chance for Tampa Bay to exploit a weird strategic decision by Mike McCarthy. So, going into halftime, we're taking a look at a 21-16 game. McCarthy goes for a 60-yard field goal, gives Brady a handful of seconds there, albeit with no timeouts, but enough time to try and manufacture something, and then we wind up with an interception in the back of the end zone and potentially almost a legendary run back on what was almost a 100-plus yard pick six. Obviously winds up getting brought down. It was quite the snag and quite the run back, if I'm being completely honest. Either way, so what's my takeaway from this game? I think Dallas is probably the best team in the NFC East. I know the rest of the teams haven't played yet, but I doubt the New York Football Giants are going to go shock anyone, you know, this football season. Could I see them potentially fighting for a wild card? I mean, it'd have to be a weak NFC, but it's possible. You know, with the Saints, maybe the Saints fall apart because Drew Brees isn't there. Maybe Darnold isn't it for Carolina. Some of these other guys, maybe Kirk Cousins winds up, you know, wrapped up in the protocol, as we've seen he's a little bit scared of, or even, you know, just having another Kirk Cousins season going maybe 8-9. All right, well, that eliminates one division. You know, you look around, the NFC West is going to be really strong. The North, how long will Dalton start? Is that team trying to contend? I don't think so. Detroit, will Jared Goff be able to piece it together with the supporting cast they have there? I don't think so. You know, and we mentioned the Vikings, obviously, out of division. You know what I mean? I was talking about. But either way, I think that this Dallas Cowboys team showed that this offense is still going to be potent. Dak Prescott looked like Dak Prescott. It was a little concerning that Zeke Elliott barely touched the football. I believe that was just a strategic decision because they were missing Zach Martin. It didn't look like they had much going on the ground when they did try to run the ball. Amari Cooper looked great on the outside. CeeDee Lamb, he ends the game with 7 snags for 104 and a touchdown, but he had a case of the dropsies in the first half, and then he had a big tipped pick, you know, chance to kind of take the lead in this one, I believe. I think it was 21-19 at the time when that interception happened. Only pick Dak had in the game. Other than that, he was 41 of 57. 42 of 57, excuse me. 403 yards and 3 touchdowns. On the other side, Tom Brady, 32 of 50, 379, 4 touchdowns, and the aforementioned 2 picks. Big thing also for Tampa, Rojo with the fumble in this game. You wonder if Arians is going to lose a little bit of confidence in him. They only ran the ball 14 times this game. They aired out a lot. The average is not great on the ground. So, I don't know, a little bit odd. On the other end, a big thing for Dallas, obviously, if you're a Cowboy fan or if you watch this game, you realize, Greg the Leg, what the heck happened, buddy? 2 missed field goals, one of them being the 60-yarder before halftime. Okay, so he misses a kick, and he misses an extra point. And you take a look, that's 4 points off the board. You lose by 2. He took responsibility after the game. It is what it is. Obviously, a lot of people also chirping about the potential offensive pass interference on the last drive from Godwin of Tampa Bay. I thought it was a PI live. I thought if they still had the challenge pass interference rule that it would have been overturned. This was a classic left too much time for Brady game. We've seen these ad nauseum. Dallas put up much more of a fight than I thought they would, but it is what it is. I also thought on that last drive that the Brady overthrow up the right sideline looked like it might have been pushing towards intentional grounding territory, if I'm being honest. The way he just kind of bombed it out there, and then it looked like there was a little bit of a miscommunication, perhaps. No call, which is, you know, it's a Tom Brady game, so it is what it is, if you're a Cowboy fan. But, I don't know, kind of intriguing to me, to say the least. Takeaway from this game, Tampa Bay still looks pretty good. You know, it's week one. They really got into form towards the middle slash last end of the year last year. They really got into a groove. So I'm not going to knock them too hard. They are the defending champions. They do return everyone. Antonio Brown looked pretty damn good. He looked like the Antonio Brown from Pittsburgh, which would be massive. Godwin looked good. Not much out of Mike Evans in this game. 3 snags, kind of, you know, faded into the background. But that's okay. Big game from Gronk. Is Gronk going to have, you know, maybe last year he was working his way into playing shape a little bit, you know, coming out of retirement, stuff like that. I don't know. Maybe Rob Gronkowski is going to be a force this year. If that's the case, then I feel even more confident in my pick of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to be the one seed. I mean, like I said, the guy looked like Gronk. There's not much more I can say. So yeah, let me know what you guys thought in the comment section, if there is a comment section where you are listening to this, or on social media, all social medias, Twitter, Instagram, all those, at Nick Donadic, NikDonadic. So, number 2 in the standout 7, let's talk about the Baltimore Ravens. So they lose in a huge whirlwind day at practice, they lose Marcus Peters and the Gus Bus to ACL injuries. They've already lost J.K. Dobbins to a lower leg injury as well. All 3 likely to miss the entirety of the season. And by likely, I mean they are going to. So what do they do? Well, they brought in Le'Veon Bell, Latavius Murray, and Devontae Freeman. Let's go one at a time here. So what does Le'Veon Bell have left in the tank? I don't really know. The guy's not that old. I mean, you know, he's 27 years young. No, excuse me. 29. I was looking at the wrong column. 29 years young. So he's on the right side of 30 for now. The last time he was a 1,000-yard rusher was 2017 back in Pittsburgh. Obviously, he sat out 18. 19, he was under 800 yards. 2020, we all know, winds up exiting the New York Jets. Winds up playing for Kansas City. Kind of had beef after the fact, it seemed, a little bit with Andy Reid. I don't know if that was him thinking he should have got the ball more. I don't know what that is, what that's all about. Saying he didn't like it there, he wouldn't go back if that was the only team offering him a contract, I believe he said. I mean, in his time there, he ran for 250 yards. It's nothing crazy. Obviously, his skill set brings in the fact that he's a darn good receiving back as well. So you wonder, is that going to be a little bit of an added element to the Ravens' offense? Perhaps. I believe Dobbins caught the ball out of the backfield a little bit last year, as we take a look at Dobbins' stats. It was a good rookie season for him, if I'm being completely honest. I liked him out of college. 18 catches for a buck 20. Nothing crazy, you know. For Le'Veon Bell, that's a slow couple of weeks. So maybe we see him feature something like that. We take a look at Devontae Freeman, who I believe was a New York Giant last year. Yeah, didn't really impress me. 54 carries for a buck 72, a career low 3.2 yards per carry. However, that is the legendary New York Giants offense, which has been getting torn apart for years and has yet to really find its way. The big signing, I would say, and if you want to use the word big and say it's a little generous, I understand. Latavius Murray coming off of a year where he ran for 656 yards. Not a lot, but he was kind of splitting time in that New Orleans backfield, obviously, with Alvin Kamara and the like. 4.5 yards per attempt, pretty darn good. 23 snags for a buck 70. You're looking at a backfield that's going to feature Latavius Murray, Le'Veon Bell, and Devontae Freeman. If I told you that 4 years ago, you'd be really excited. I think you should still be excited if you're a Raven fan, if nothing more than because you can make the argument it's the best of what you've got, you know? The alternatives being you're going to churn through some of the guys that no one's ever heard of, which, I might add, does occasionally lead to you finding a lead back who's pretty good. That does happen, but Baltimore being a win-now team obviously took the veteran approach. I think it's the right move. I think of the three, Latavius Murray will probably have the most impact, and I think the worst would probably, if I had to make a bet, would say Devontae Freeman, but I'm not exactly super high on Le'Veon either. I thought Le'Veon would be more of an impact player for Kansas City last year. Maybe he thought he would as well. I could see him having a bounce-back year, especially with the added motivation of being in division with his former team, obviously, with the way things went down with him exiting Pittsburgh. So, number three in the standout seven, as we rush through, Deshaun Watson. Do we see him at all this year? It was apparently news, and I say apparently because some people thought it wouldn't happen. Apparently news that he would not dress for Houston. He will be, you know, on the roster, obviously, but he's not going to dress for the game as he's facing an army of civil suits relating to sexual assault allegations. We're not going to go into the validity or potential, you know, consequences of that. We're not really here to talk about that, as I said at the outset. But it's worth noting that we're talking about a league where Ben Roethlisberger was suspended when he, I believe, did not face civil, you know, actions and did not inevitably wind up being convicted in relation to, I believe it was either a sexual assault or a rape allegation. It's intriguing. You want to take a look at the other sports. Trevor Bauer has been accused of some things related to sexual assault and regular assault, depending on how far you push into the details. He's been on leave in Major League Baseball for quite some time. He's not going to be off the commissioner's list, so to speak, exempt list, until after the World Series to make sure that he does not play in any of the high-profile games or things like that, yada, yada, yada. It's intriguing to me that Deshaun Watson has not yet been placed on the NFL's version of the commissioner's list. We saw Adrian Peterson placed on the commissioner's list for an incident involving himself and his son when he was disciplining him via, you know, beating him. So it's intriguing to me. I guess, that Deshaun Watson can be accused by so many people of doing so many things, and somehow it's still up to the team to put their foot down? I mean, does that mean if they wanted to, they could play him this week? Is that what that implies? I mean, for those of you saying, just cut him, just let him go. No, that's not how it works. That's very clearly not how it works. The team's going to be bad either way. You're giving up the leverage and the control of, and look, this is, people get, a little angry when you say things like that in terms of control of an asset in Deshaun Watson, who's one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. We're talking about a guy who played on a team last year that was not good and still found a way to throw for 4,800 yards and only throw 7 interceptions. You know what I mean? Like, have you looked at his accomplishments? This guy is a darn good QB, dating all the way back to Clemson. Look at his receiving core from last year. Brandon Cooks, 1,100 yards. Brandon Cooks, still pretty good. Will Fuller, when he's out there, pretty good. 879, 400 yards to Randall Cobb. 400 yards to Jordan Akins. Anyone get him in fantasy? 400 yards to Kiki Kuti. Anyone get him in fantasy? 300 yards to the shell of David Johnson. 300 yards to Darren Fells. Yes, Darren Fells still in the league. A little under 300 yards to Duke Johnson. We're talking about guys that are not really big threats here. In terms of receiving, in terms of being dynamic. Brandon Cooks, good player. Double thumbs up. Will Fuller, double thumbs up, even bigger if you turned injuries off, if we were playing Madden. In real life, thumb up and a half because of the injury concerns. But this is their best asset. This is their ticket to, jump-starting their rebuild, reboot of their team. Why would you give that away simply because of, it's a PR nightmare? Of course it's a PR nightmare. But it's his PR nightmare. It's not really their PR nightmare. You understand what I'm saying? Because he's got one foot out the door already. I said it from the outset, he's not going to play for another team this season. I thought they wouldn't trade him, period. Then obviously these accusations come out. Now he's kind of persona non grata. Is he going to play for another team this season? No. Will he play for Houston this season? No. It's not going to happen. I wonder if it's not a situation where if the team attempted to play him, the commissioner would then step in and say, no, you can't play this guy. That's not how this works. It's possible that's how it would have went down. We'll never know. We're speaking in hypotheticals. But the fact of the matter is, Houston made the right call keeping him. Houston also made the right call not playing him. Number 4 in the standout 7, let's talk about T.J. Watt. T.J. Watt, obviously, my pick to be the Defensive Player of the Year. Some people said should have been Defensive Player of the Year last year. I'm not here to make that argument. A 4-year, $112 million extension. That's big money. That's big, big money. $35 million signing bonus. These numbers are per spot rack, as per usual. Total guaranteed money, $80 million. Now there's two reasons I want to talk about this. One, he's my Defensive Player of the Year candidate, my Defensive Player of the Year pick, and I think it's huge that he's going to be on the field for Pittsburgh, especially week one when they take on Buffalo. Big test to start the year for a Pittsburgh Steeler team that I called the worst 11-0 team I've ever seen, and then immediately collapsed. Not to toot my own horn, but I'm the only host on the show, so I got to do what I got to do. A little Nostradamus hat on for a little while there. So the other thing is, it's a huge message being sent to the fans, the franchise, and to some other players. Look, I get it, players are always going to want the most money for what they do. They're going to want the most security. It's a job. You have a limited time where you can get this money, secure your family, secure your future for generations and generations. I understand. Look, I'll never be in that situation, but I get it from, 10,000 feet in the air. I get it. So the reason I say this sent a message, one, sends a message to the fans, hey, I want to be here. Because reportedly, he bypassed his agent to accept this deal. His agent believed they could get more money, and that they should continue to kind of play hardball. T.J. Watt did not want to do that, and it's reminiscent of, J.J. Watt signing his big extension with the Houston Texans, and then reportedly, in the gym the next day at 4 in the morning working out. It seems to be just the way the Watts do things, and it's, admirable, to say the least. If you're a fan, that's how you want every player on your team to be, good, bad, whatever. You want them to be all in on your team, all in to win, all in to be there in your city, whether it be New York, Los Angeles, Cleveland, Baltimore, anywhere. any city you want them to be all in, and it's hard-nosed, and it sends that message to, you know, a hard-nosed city in Pittsburgh who likes to keep up their reputation. But the reason I say it sends a message to the other players in the league is that we've had plenty of guys, particularly at skill positions, hold out and hold out. We just talked about Le'Veon Bell. Hold out, hold out, hold out, hold out. I want my money, I want my money, I want my money. Well, this guy, who is pretty much pushing towards the peak of his career, right? You got to remember, last year was his age 26 season. He's going to be in this prime area. 15 sacks, the year before 14.5, the year before 13. How high can he go is the question, right? With a 17th game, will he break 20 sacks this year? I mean, obviously it's a big jump from 15 to 20, but you had an extra game, you never know. So it's a big message to send that a guy entering the prime of his career realizes he's in a place that he wants to be, realizes that the financial gain is not significant enough for him to take, one, what likely might have been a PR hit, two, you know, fan base might have soured on him a little bit. Obviously, they always welcome you back if you perform. But three, you know, the guy just wants to get out there and play football. At the end of the day, that sends a good message, and he believes that he's in a spot to contend. With his quarterback being 40 years of age, you can think, you know, he misses two or three games. Well, you know, I mean, Ben gets nicked up now and again throughout his career. So this championship window, if you want to call it that, right, for the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Ben Roethlisberger championship era, you might call it, if you go that far, is coming close to a conclusion. So missing, you know, week one, week two, for the chance to get $5 million. Now, $5 million is not nothing. That's more money than you and me will see the rest of our lives. Maybe on down a couple of generations, depending on, you know, maybe your kid will be 7 feet tall. But still, it's not nothing. But in the grand scheme, when you're making $80 million guaranteed, pushing with incentives up higher and higher, because I do believe he's going to be a great player, as I said, for the next few years at least, you know, hopefully injuries notwithstanding, you know, you hope everybody's healthy. But it's a good sign for Pittsburgh, and I think it's, you know, a refreshing thing to see in a league where we've seen so many guys just say, nope, give me my money or I'm not playing. Number five in the standout seven, we got a little bit of slander for you. What? Slander? Got a little bit of Carson Wentz slander coming out of his own former front office. Howie Roseman, Eagles GM, on if he would draft Jalen Hurts again to HT Sports Radio WIP. Not a Pennsylvania guy here, so if I butchered your station, I apologize. We loved Carson. We played four playoff games, and we needed our backup in every one, implying he would draft Jalen Hurts again and again and again. No problem with him saying he'd draft Hurts again, but why the need to take the parting shot at Carson Wentz here, as Wentz will play this week for the Indianapolis Colts as they take on Seattle in what I think is going to be a fantastic 1 o'clock kick. And it's going to be one of those games that can kind of send a message if you're Carson Wentz. We'll get into the pick 'em portion in a bit. I know everybody loves that part of the show. I love that part of the show, if I'm being completely honest. But I think it's a little unnecessary to take the parting shot. Look, I know it's easy to do. And I know if you're there and you're in it, if you're involved in what happened and the way things shook out with Carson Wentz, you're probably a little salty. You are. You're probably a little salty. And at the end of the day, you want to take your shot. You thought you were on the you know, precipice of maybe a dynasty. This guy, he was 11-2 as a starter in 17. We're talking 33 touchdowns, 7 picks with 3 games to play. 3,300 yards, right? He didn't hit 3,300 yards until 2019. Oh, by the way, in 19, they go 9-7, 27 touchdowns, 7 picks. You know, we're talking a team that winds up losing in the wild card game of the playoffs. Okay. They lose to the Seattle Seahawks. And obviously, as they said, you know, in that game, well, we got to go to our backup quarterback. Yeah, I get it. I get it. I know. I watched the game. Everyone did. You could be a little salty about it, but look, the fact of the matter is, the guy helped get you a ring. You didn't have any. Look, and growing up in New York City, I could tell you, look, people's expectations are different depending on the history of your franchise. Did you see the celebrations in Chicago after the Cubs broke the curse, right, and won the World Series? Did you see the celebrations in Boston after 2004? Like, If someone brings a title to a place that either A, hasn't won in a long time, or B, hasn't won ever, they are celebrated and loved. But for some reason, and I know the reason, all the love from the 2017 Eagles championship goes on to everyone but Carson Wentz. Look, I get it. The guy got hurt. I know. I have eyes. But this guy puts you in a prime position to make that playoff run. You think he wanted to get hurt? It's not his fault. He can't control his health, as we always make the joke. You can't turn injuries off. This is not a game of Madden. You're talking about a team. Take a look at the rest of the stats for the regular season. Lead rusher, LeGarrette Blount at 31 years of age. The receiving core, not bad. Zach Ertz at 27. Alshon Jeffrey at 27. Nelly Aguilar, that all everyone ever did was, you know, rip for dropping balls, 760 receiving yards. Torrey Smith on this team. Trey Burton, obviously the Philly special shenanigans in the Super Bowl. An aging Brent Celek at 32 years of age. There's some name brands in there, I get it. But you can't act like this guy didn't play a big role in you winning a title. You want to knock him for not being there? Okay, fine. It is what it is. He can't control that. But you can't act like you didn't get a W out of drafting this guy high. You're a franchise that has never won anything. Anything. He helped you win. What more can he do? I get it. You know, he wasn't the guy catching the Philly special. He couldn't. He literally could not. You know, we're talking, as we mentioned, in the other sports, Cubs winning it all, right? They wind up trading a guy in Gleyber Torres who, pre this season and a little bit of last year, looked like he would be an everyday shortstop / second baseman who was a slugger, right? They get Aroldis Chapman to help bolster their bullpen, and he leaves and goes back to New York. Oh, you got fleeced. No. You didn't get fleeced. You won. That's all that matters. Look, if you're making one of those big things, and this is obviously easier in baseball and other sports, if you're making a big deadline move, if the guy helps you win, it's a W. If he doesn't help you win, it is what it is. The guy could play out of his mind. If you didn't win, does it matter? Who got more out of their high draft pick quarterbacks? The Philadelphia Eagles with Carson Wentz or the Indianapolis Colts with Andrew Luck? Who has more Super Bowl rings? Okay. Do we need to go any further into this? Who got more out of that? Well, you can't compare it to Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck's career ended because of injuries. Oh, did it now? Well, Carson Wentz is still going. Andrew Luck had some good years there. 11-5, 11-5, 11-5, 10-6 in his final year at 29 years of age. We're talking 40 touchdowns in his third season. We're talking, you know, big wins. Look at this. They beat the Denver Broncos 24-13. Remember that in 14? Do you remember that game? Do you? Do you remember when Andrew Luck defeated Peyton Manning in a playoff game? Do you remember that? Yeah, they don't give rings for that. It doesn't matter if you remember it. You know why nobody else cares about it? Because his career, unfortunately due to injuries, ended prematurely, and it did not result in the Hall of Fame career we all thought it would. It resulted in the what-ifs that we always hear about. It resulted in the what-ifs. It's the, you know, it's not as bad as the guy at the park who's, you know, doing great in rec league football, and he looks like Calvin Johnson, and he tells you about how he blew out his knee his last game of high school before college and lost a scholarship. It's not that. I'm not going that deep into it. That's a big sad story, but this is just as sad. We're talking about a guy that had, oh, he's the best quarterback we've ever seen. He is the literal prototype of the quarterback position. Now, obviously, since then, they've thrown that phrase at several guys. I heard a couple say, well, Trevor Lawrence is the best quarterback prospect I've ever seen. Come on. What are we doing? That's another story. But for Howie Roseman to take that parting shot at Carson Wentz, I think is not only unnecessary. I get it why you can be mad, but you think the owner's angry? You think, is it Jeffrey Lurie, I believe? You think Jeffrey Lurie is angry about this? He's angry that, oh no, I only won one Super Bowl. Compared to all the other years where you won none? Come on now, get over it. I feel bad for Carson. Look, oh, you want to be mad about the contract extension? You want to be mad about that? You can be mad about whatever you want. Free country. You can be mad about it if you want. Plenty of teams have been suckered into giving the big contract after a Super Bowl win or a World Series win, NBA Finals win. You're not the first. You won't be the last. Suck it up. You got to win. Goodness. Number six in the standout seven is going to be a jumbo size one. So we're going to, after this, we'll do news and notes. We'll get into the picks. Number six, and I'm stealing this from last year, Nick, because last year Nick had a great idea. Couple of players who this is going to be a big season for. And I don't mean big season as in breakout player, because anybody can do a breakout player list. No. I mean players who this season will potentially impact their career. Last year, my example is Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford winds up out of Detroit after the season. Good pick by me. Le'Veon Bell. I thought he'd need to either, you know, have a bounce back or it is what it is. Well, we saw he didn't have a bounce back, and he wound up on the free agent market until every running back in the state of Maryland was injured for the Ravens. Third one, Derek Carr. Well, we'll start with Derek Carr. This year, I'm going to double down on the Derek Carr. We're going to go Derek Carr part two, if you will. Derek Carr, 8-8 last year, on the outside looking in, 27 touchdowns to 9 picks. Arguably, you know, his best season since the 2016 year, when he was 12-3 as a starter, 28 touchdowns to 6 picks. They wind up losing in the wild card round to the Houston Texans with Matt McGloin, Connor Cook. It was a catastrophe after the Derek Carr injury. So, and it's interesting because that's similar, you know, to the kind of situation we're talking about with Carson Wentz in terms of a guy that was leading the team, MVP candidate, gets hurt, but whatever. So the reason I had Derek Carr on here is because I thought, perhaps incorrectly, I mean obviously incorrectly, that Derek Carr was kind of in a spot where they'd be like, look, we're going to move on, come off season perhaps, but I guess whether it be because the cap number was too high, maybe a team like the Rams was more interested in a Matthew Stafford, who's been around longer, you know, he's got some big game experience, but not really. The numbers are better. The mobility isn't better, and the age is, you know, higher. But they went with Stafford over a guy like Derek Carr, who we don't even know if he was available. Carr, at this point, has 2 years left on his contract with the Las Vegas Raiders. And I just thought, considering the Raiders are not going to be firing John Gruden anytime soon, you can assume, based on the fact that he signed a billion-year contract, this is now the fourth season under John Gruden. They have improved every year. 4-12 the first season, 7-9 the second season, 8-8 this past season. Will they break 8-8 this year? I think it's possible. I think there's some talent on this team, but eventually, you know, as we get towards the middle of this monster John Gruden contract, you know, and if you don't remember, by the way, John Gruden, at the time, working at ESPN, Monday Night Football, doing a great job, just signs a 10-year, $100 million contract to become the coach of the Raiders. Hadn't coached, obviously, in quite some time. And, I mean, I don't think necessarily John Gruden has been bad as the head coach of the Raiders, so I wouldn't say they should move on, especially you can't cut bait on, you know, $70 million. But either way, I think that eventually it's going to come on someone's shoulders that they're going to be in a spot where they're not in the playoffs, potentially another season. So why not Derek Carr? If you can't fire Gruden, and Mike Mayock has been doing a, you know, a decent job bringing in talent. Obviously, the team hasn't been good enough to make the playoffs, but he found Darren Waller. I believe he drafted Josh Jacobs. I'm not 100% on that. They've brought in some players. Henry Ruggs, the speedster. Let's see how he develops. I like Renfro at the wide receiver position. I don't think he's a star, but he's a good player to have on your team in your wide receiver, you know, sort of room, I guess you can call it. I don't know. I just think that eventually there's going to have to be a time where it's going to be, all right, Derek, you're going to have to get a change of scenery or we're going to have to move on at quarterback. Because you can't just keep missing the playoffs. Every team, we'll take a look at last year's standings, and we'll do this as an example. Every team that missed the playoffs for a reason. Oh, what a great fact, Nick. No, what I mean is, take a look around the league. The New York Jets were not trying to compete. You can't field the roster they did and then say, oh yeah, we're going to be a Super Bowl contender. No, like, come, you have a head on your shoulders, right? So take a look. The New England Patriots, they're trying to come back after losing the greatest quarterback of all time. Obviously, they were not going to be as good. Did they underachieve? Perhaps. But they tried the Cam Newton experiment. It didn't work out. Miami, young quarterback. They found a way to go 10-6. That's a win of a loss. You understand? Like, that's a good season, even though you missed the playoffs. Los Angeles Chargers, rookie quarterback, somehow leads them all the way to 7-9. That season couldn't have gone much better. Win a couple more games, get to the playoffs, maybe make a run. Yeah, you could have a miracle Super Bowl run, maybe. But it doesn't matter if he made the playoffs in that season. He played out of his mind. You saw a lot for your future. Denver, awful situation, right? Awful. Vic Fangio, awful situation. Not on him, but on injuries. Injuries and injuries and injuries. Quarterback position, you didn't get any answers out of Drew Locke. That's why you're going to see, and we'll get into this guy in a minute, Teddy Bridgewater coming in to try and, you know, be the guy. Well, maybe we can get something out of this guy. Because you have enough good talent on that team where you shouldn't be 5-11, or this year it would be 5-12, I guess you could say. But at the same time, with all the injuries they had, you understand it. Bengals, coming off drafting number one. They go 4-11-1. Their star quarterback, star, you know, air quotes, because we don't know if he's a star yet. Their star acquisition hurts himself. Doesn't play the whole season. Texans, awful team. Gutted themselves by trading DeAndre Hopkins. Gutted their front office. Gutted their coaching staff. Jacksonville, awful team. You know, you see what I'm getting at here. So you're taking a look, and all these teams have a reason, and they're all either trending in one direction or the other. You can make the argument there's a handful of teams that would fall in the same boat as the Raiders. You might say a team like Atlanta, and we'll talk about Atlanta in a second. You know, you might talk about the Vikings. They have a lot of talent there, but they just don't ever piece it together. Blame it on Kirk Cousins if you want. It is what it is. You talk about a team like San Francisco. Injuries, injuries, injuries. So my point being, you're going to find guys in this situation and on my list where I say they need to have a big season because it's a bleep or get off the pot moment, if you will, for some of these teams. You know, let's get into Teddy Bridgewater. This is a big season for Teddy Bridgewater's career trajectory. Now, what do I mean by career trajectory? I mean, Teddy Bridgewater, at the age of 23, was 11-5 and led a team to the playoffs at 23 years old in his second season. He suffered a horrible injury and has since been not that guy anymore. You know, 2019, he steps in for an injured Drew Brees. He starts five games. He throws for 1,300 yards, 9 touchdowns, 2 picks on a team that was pretty darn good in that New Orleans team. You remember they went 13-3. They lose in the wild card round, okay? We're talking last year. Winds up starting for Carolina. Okay, you're like, all right, maybe this is Teddy's chance. Teddy at 28 years of age. Teddy, show me what you got. Christian McCaffrey goes down. Teddy Bridgewater, 15 touchdowns to 11 picks. That's not going to impress anybody. 4-11, almost 4,000 yards. It is what it is. That was not a good Carolina team. I'm not saying this is a good Denver team, but I'm saying if this is his third shot to be a starting quarterback, the first one ends prematurely due to injury. The second one, we're not counting New Orleans, that was a fill-in. The second one, he's a rental for Carolina. Carolina goes, eh. They play mediocre at best in some of these situations. They wind up with a losing record. They go out and get Sam Darnold. Let's see what he's got. A big year for him, too. He's going to be on this list. And these guys are all connected. I didn't realize. It's like, you know, what is it? 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon or whatever it's called. Everybody's connected. It's like a spider web. Either way. So now this is his third shot. If he goes out and he goes 4-6 to start the season, with 13 touchdowns to 8 picks, you might as well bench him. Because right now, he is on a one-year contract. And you know, if your team is not great, you don't know what you have in Drew Locke. Presumably, since they even went out and got Teddy Bridgewater, they're not high on Drew Locke, this current administration. But Drew Locke last year, 4-9, 16 touchdowns to 15 picks. The year before, he only started 5 games, and I thought Drew Lock and the Broncos last year were going to make a breakthrough. The injuries cut into that tremendously. But at the end of the day, you got to know what you have in this kid. If you're going to give up on Drew Lock after his age 25 season, you might miss out on the bulk of this guy's good years in the NFL. We're talking about a situation where you wind up like Josh Rosen, where you're just thrown around. Nobody thinks he has any talent. Does Josh Rosen have any talent? I couldn't tell you. I don't think he's very good, but he's been thrown around so many times that that's the perception you get as an outsider. You know, we're not in these front offices. We're not in these quarterback rooms and these coaches' meetings and things like that. The situation you wind up in, if you're a guy like Teddy Bridgewater, is you've had 3 shots at it. The first one was good. That was forever ago. You're a different quarterback since the injury. That first one doesn't count. We don't know if you can do that anymore. You're Derrick Rose trying to make an impact, trying to show you still got it. You're a late career Greg Oden. You're a late career Brandon Roy. People will look at you, as rude as it is, and call you damaged goods because of the injuries you sustained. I think Teddy can still be a competent NFL quarterback. I thought at one point he was going to be a pretty darn good QB. I don't know if I've seen the same since the injury. I'm not saying his talent has diminished entirely. I'm saying the numbers don't lie sometimes. And you got to go with what they say. Teddy's career trajectory is at stake. He could be a starter for them next year if he does well. Or if they end the year at 5-12, they draft a QB, he winds up a backup somewhere. Next, keeping with the line, Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold, famously New York Jet, bust, if you will, 3 years starting, 7-6 his second year, the other year is a combined 6-19, never thrown 20 touchdowns, never thrown for more than 3,100 yards. He has not played on good football teams. Now, this is might be me defending Sam Darnold, because I think it'd be funny if he's great outside of New York for the Jets, which it would be. But this is the situation Drew Lock will find himself in after this year. Unless he comes in for Teddy in relief, hopefully not for an injury, of course. But if the team's not doing well, if he impresses in those limited in his limited action, he'll get to stick around. This is going to be Drew Lock next year, potentially. On a new team, in a new scheme, new system, try and impress and see what you got. Because the fact of the matter is, the Carolina Panthers are not going to, you know, they're not going to be distraught if it doesn't work out with Sam Darnold. Don't think that they will be. Because if he plays poorly, then you're the team that's at the top of the draft next year. You got Sam Darnold for a bag of beans. Well, let's see what you get next year. Let's see what quarterback's going to be the new phenom. And that's a guy that this front office can handpick. This coaching staff can handpick. Maybe it'll be a good quarterback class. Maybe it'll be a bad quarterback class. It's going to be their quarterback class if he doesn't play well. And he's going to wind up in a situation similar to Josh Rosen if he does not play well. They won't give him a second year to be a mediocre starter. This team goes 5-12. He has another one of these seasons where he goes 19 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. That's not it. You're just wasting time at that point. Look, I know this. The rest of the team is developing, so to speak. But with Robbie Anderson on the outside, along with Moore, Christian McCaffrey, if he's healthy in that backfield, this team should put up some points. This should be, and I say should easily be the most yardage and most touchdowns Sam Darnold's ever thrown for in a season. He should easily eclipse the numbers of 3,024 yards, 19 touchdowns. Because Christian McCaffrey is such a weapon out of the backfield, coupled with the other guys, and he knows Robbie Anderson. Look, and I said it before in one of the other episodes, I'd hate to see Robbie Anderson's numbers take a hit, because I thought he was great on the Jets, and they undervalued him, and he became a star. I called that one. Yeah, gotta toot your own horn. As I said, what was that, second time this episode? That means I'm gonna have a horrible pick'em segment, by the way. That's the way it goes. That's the way it goes around, comes around, sort of thing. But in all seriousness, he's got to have a good year. And, you know, oh, everybody's got to have a good year. No, legitimately, this guy could be out of the league in a couple years if he has another stinker. He could be Josh Rosen, the bounce-around sort of backup quarterback practice squad guy. Well, thing is, the backup quarterback's got to have value in that you either got to be the next guy, you know, your young guy that they're grooming, or you got to be competent enough to come in and fill in the blanks while we have an injury. You got to be a guy that looks like Andy Dalton. You got to be a guy like Nick Foles. You got to be a guy like Robert Griffin, who can come in and fill in those blanks. By the way, I think Cam Newton can totally fit that. But that's neither here nor there. Either way, you got to be one of those guys, or you got to be a Trey Lance. Oh, okay, we got to give a little bit of time. Give him a little bit of time to develop. We'll get there. We're feeling it out. Feeling it out. You got to be rookie year Daniel Jones on the bench for half the year, and then you find your way in. Okay, he's not ready. Let's throw him in there. Let's see what he's got. Sam Darnold, there is no give him some time. You have to perform, or you're going to be, I don't know where. I'm not saying you're going to be in Canada. I'm not going to go that far. But you do have to come to the table and show this team what you have. Otherwise, by the way, as we take a look at his contract via SpotRack, as we always do, you know, this year he's making $4 million. Next year, that's a big chunk of change on that contract. It's a big chunk of change to be a backup. You got to do enough where they could at least get somebody else interested. Is this Carolina team going to be a surprise contender? They might be. I think they'll put up points. I'm not confident necessarily in some of the things in their defense or their offensive line per se, but, I mean, it's been enough for McCaffrey before. This turned into an entire salvo on the Carolina Panthers, but point being, you know, make a move, Darnold. Keeping it in division, by the way, let's talk Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston is going to be a starting NFL quarterback after having thrown 30 interceptions in a season. We talked about this before, how Jameis Winston had the most unbelievable season ever, and it will never be matched. 5,000 yards, 30 touchdowns, 30 picks. That's not a good season. That's a legendary season. And I don't mean Peyton Manning legendary, Tom Brady legendary. No, I mean, oh my goodness, how did you do that? That is, to switch sports, that's the baseball equivalent of a guy having a 400 on-base percentage, 50 home runs, and 200 strikeouts. I don't think you could even do that mathematically. Now that I think about it, yeah. I don't think that's mathematically possible. It's like a guy having 50 home runs, 130 RBIs, and 200 strikeouts. It's impressive to be that level of, you know, at least good. You got to be good to score touchdowns, right? I mean, everybody does it. Every team scores every week almost. But to throw 33 touchdowns in the NFL, we just talked about Sam Darnold. He's never thrown 20. 33 touchdowns. And by the way, remember in his rookie year, 22 touchdowns, 15 picks. The next year, the team goes 9-7. He throws 28 touchdowns, 18 picks. The picks have always been high. We talked about back when Eli Manning was in the league, Jameis Winston has that Eli Manning in him. He thinks he can always make those big plays. He can make that throw. And that's the Dr. Jekyll and Hyde. He can go out and throw 4 picks 1 week, and the next week throw 4 touchdowns, 325 yards, and your team wins. And you're like, wow, look at that. Not saying Eli Manning was necessarily always throwing 4 touchdowns and 325 yards, but you get what I mean. The reason I say this, and it's kind of obvious, you know, we got to take the easy ones. It's big for Jameis is because this is Jameis' second try. We talked about Teddy getting 3 shots, 2 after the injury. So we'll call it 2 shots. This is his second attempt to be an NFL starting quarterback. If he starts poorly, call it halfway through the year, he might be benched, and I don't know if he'll ever start again. Not for New Orleans, but for everyone. He might be making his last NFL start this season until he's a fill-in guy as a backup, perhaps. Like, this is huge. It's a lot of pressure, but call me crazy, and you know, if you listened last week, and if you did, we thank you, as usual. I have this New Orleans team making the playoffs. Almost. You know, I have this New Orleans team in there as the 6th seed, rather. I don't know. It's one of those hard decisions for me, but I think Jameis has enough talent where he can still pull together a career. The guy's 27. Come on now. Tom Brady's 56,000 years old. Tom Brady's first tight end was a Velociraptor. Like, come on. He could still have a whole career left. He could have another decade left if he plays well this year. Well, not just this year making a decade, but you know what I mean. He could kick off another decade. Finally, keeping it in that NFC South, which is one of the reasons I had the Bucks as the 1 seed, because they have so many question marks. Let's talk about Matty Ice. Matty Ice, you know, all offseason I was advocating if there was a Deshaun Watson trade, Deshaun Watson should be dealt to the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons should then deal their quarterback, Matt Ryan, to the Washington Footballers. And then both teams should funnel draft picks at the Texans. This way, the Falcons would get younger at the QB position and better at this point. I would make that argument. Deshaun Watson, if he was allowed to play, is a better quarterback than Matt Ryan. The Washington Footballers would have a consistent quarterback to run out there and become an immediate contender in that division. If not, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say neck and neck with Dallas, but Dallas loves to choke things, so you can make that argument, potentially. And then on top of that, Houston would, as we said, jumpstart that rebuild by being in position to potentially get a guy like Pitts, who wound up playing for the Falcons. Now, obviously, this fell apart completely with Deshaun Watson and the accusations and all that, and that it is what it is. The accusations are obviously more serious than, you know, messing up my hypothetical trade. However, I stand by the fact that Atlanta's got to make a decision here. I mean, you could let Matt Ryan play out his NFL career with your team and, you know, let it be, well, maybe Matt will be here when we're good again. Maybe they'll be good again this year. I think they have offensive weapons. I really like Calvin Ridley. Let's see what he could do as a number one. I think he has the talent, but without Julio on the other side to distract defenses, maybe they go to him a little more. Okay, well, let's see what Kyle Pitts could do. Let's see what Mike Davis could do as a lead back. There is a potential out in the contract of Matt Ryan per SpotRac after this season, which is another reason I thought the trade would make a lot of sense. Because if the Footballers saw, well, you know, Matt wasn't that great, it is what it is. Boom! You got your out if you need it. It is what it is. But then they'd be out draft picks, and obviously, you know, whatever. The Footballers doing their thing with Ryan Fitzmagic and maybe Heinicke at one point this season. We'll see him. I think we will. Either way, I think Matt Ryan has been a top 10 quarterback for a while. I think Matt Ryan is one of the better QBs in this league. He took a team all the way to the Super Bowl before his coaching staff helped choke via play calling. I mean, look, there were some plays that he made that were poor, but the guy played a pretty good game in that Super Bowl pre-choking, if I remember correctly. Got to play pretty well to have that big of a lead. We're talking about a guy who's had 26 touchdowns, 11 picks, 4,500 yards. The guy hasn't thrown for less than 4,000 yards since 2010. We're talking about a guy who's got over 50,000 passing yards in his career. 55,000, excuse me. Pushing, he's going to hit the 350 touchdown milestone this year, and he has just over 150 picks. This is a guy in Matt Ryan who might be one of those Dan Marino-ish Hall of Famers. Now, obviously, Dan Marino, most talented quarterback than everyone assumed. I'm not saying he's Dan Marino. But I'm saying Matt Ryan has had a darn good NFL career, and they put a lot of guys in that NFL Hall of Fame. So, you're talking about a potential under-the-radar sort of Hall of Famer sort of guy. But, if you're Atlanta, are you going to be good? Like, at the end of the day, what do the fans care about? Are we going to be good? Are we going to win? 4-12, 7-9, 7-9. And a divisional exit the year prior. Obviously moving on from Dan Quinn. They're going to be going with a new head coach in Arthur Smith. Let's see how it goes. Is he a big Matt Ryan fan? I don't know. I mean, let's see what happens. Devontae Freeman's gone. Tevin Coleman's gone. Julio Jones is gone. A lot of guys you might associate with Matt Ryan, all the way back to Roddy White and Michael Berner Turner, gone. So, is it time for them to consider moving on? There's teams that would be interested. They could have got some value. They really could have, and I think they might have missed out. Maybe they'll get it next year. He's got 2 years. If they don't opt out, or if there is not a cutoff point here with the potential out, there's 2 years remaining at a total of, I believe, about $50 million. In terms of, you know, signing bonus, there's $9 million in 2022. SpotRac listing zero in 2023. Base salary, $16 million next year, $20.5 million the year after. I think they should have moved on. I don't know if this team's going to be great. As usual, I think they're going to score some points. Look, last year they choked a whole bunch of games. They went 4-12, but they were ahead in a lot of them. They were ahead in a lot of them. That's why the coach paid the price. So, let's see what happens with Atlanta. Let's see what happens. Finally, number 7 in the standout 7. Let's get into the news and notes, and then we'll get into the pick'em portion. Danny Amendola to Houston. We mentioned him last week. Good for him. 4-year deal for Mark Andrews. Good for him. Josh Norman could be playing for the Niners. Jimmy G officially ruled the number 1 QB for San Francisco. Everybody saw that coming. New Orleans going to aim for a week 4 return to playing in New Orleans. They're going to be obviously playing home away from home due to the repercussions or consequences or whatever word you want to use, destructive tendency of Hurricane Ida, which was very unfortunate. New Orleans gets Bradley Roby from the Houston Texans. A lot of moves this week for Houston. Then, finally, Naheem Hines gets a 3-year extension from Indy. That's important, too. Lyle Collins suspended 5 games for a violation after he was allowed to play in the first game of the season. Kind of weird. So that'll take us into the pick'em portion of this week's episode. Now, we're already 1-0 this week. We're 1-0 to start the year. We're going to get started. 1 p.m. kick, Seattle Seahawks at Indianapolis Colts. Now, you know I have both of these teams in the postseason. The smart money would take the Seattle Seahawks. This game is in Indianapolis. We take a look at the injury report for this game. Seattle, as of right now, per NFL.com, listing no players. The Colts going to be without tackle Eric Fisher, without corner Xavier Rhodes, questionable Quentin Nelson. 2 on the offensive line, which I think is massive. Not going to lie, I was on the fence for this one. I wanted to pick the Colts because, you know, I'm big on Carson Wentz. I think he's going to have a bounce-back season for this Colts team, especially after we talked about the whole thing ripping them. It would be a big nail in the coffin for me to pick them this week. I think it'll be a good game. I think it might be a little bit of a shootout, but I do think Seattle has more firepower, and I think Seattle is going to be pretty good this year. Next, we have a divisional matchup between two teams that are trending in opposite directions. The Jacksonville Jaguars head to Houston to take on the Texans. Jaguars listing Trey Herndon is out with a knee. Questionable D-end Jordan Smith and DB Tyson Campbell. Out for the Texans, obviously the aforementioned Deshaun Watson. DB Lonnie Johnson also out with a thigh. Questionable 2 more on the defensive side of the ball. Jonathan Greenard with an illness and linebacker Kevin Pierre-Lewis with a thigh. Trending in 2 opposite directions because Trevor Lawrence, the next big bright star out of the NFL draft, is going to be starting for the Jaguars in this one, and the Texans are going to be going with Tyrod Taylor, the bounce-around man that we've talked about before on this show. We're going to take the Jaguars. We're going to take Trevor to win this one on the road. Next, we got a Battle of the Birds. First time saying that this season, always feels good. As the Philadelphia Eagles, led by Jalen Hurts, head down to Atlanta to take on the Falcones. The Eagles going to be without safety Roddy McLeod with a knee and offensive lineman Landon Dickerson with a knee as well. Questionable linebacker Davion Taylor with a calf. Falcons listing no one on their injury report, as we said, per NFL.com. I'm going to take the Falcons in this one. I'm not big on Jalen Hurts after what I saw last year, and having just talked about how Matt Ryan's got to make a big move, I think Kyle Pitts is going to be, from what I've heard, he's one of the best tight end prospects we've ever seen. Drafted higher than any tight end ever, expecting him to make an impact. Want to see what Calvin Ridley can bring at the number 1 wide receiver position. Falcons are also at home. Give me the Falcons to be the better bird. Next, we got a battle between the East and West Coast as the Los Angeles Chargers head to Washington to take on the Footballers. By the way, if you haven't noticed, instead of saying the football team, which I'll still say sometimes now and again, ironically, because I find it hilarious, I'm going to go with the Footballers. Why not? It's purely sarcastic, to be honest, but it has a little bit more of a ring because it is a plural word as opposed to the singular football team. Either way, I'm going to take the Chargers to win this one over the football team on the road. Fitzmagic is the ultimate, ooh, what's going to happen, sort of quarterback. But with Curtis Samuel going to be missing this game as we get into the injuries, with Curtis Samuel missing this game, I think their firepower is going to take a little bit of a hit. And I do think the Chargers are going to be a just miss of the playoffs this year. And I think that'll start this year. Excuse me, that'll start this week in a game that you can make the argument they are probably the better team. That being said, they are going to be without DB Trey Marshall with an ankle, and Austin Eckler is questionable. I believe he's going to go with a hamstring, but he is listed officially as questionable. Next, we've got a matchup between two AFC playoff teams from last season as the Pittsburgh Steelers head up to Buffalo to take on the Bills. For this one, the Pittsburgh Steelers listing no one on their injury report. The Buffalo Bills going to be without Star Lotulelei on the D-line with a calf and questionable wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders with a foot. Now, I mentioned in my preview episode that I think the Bills are not going to be as successful as they were last year. However, I still have them winning their division, and I think they are the better team in this one. I think TJ Watt's going to try and be a big impact on the field in this one, having just signed that big extension, maybe be pressing a little bit. Not like it's going to hurt him that much. But at the end of the day, I just think the Bills, quite honestly, are the better team. Give me Buffalo to win this one at home. I know it's a little bit of a cop-out to go with the better team argument, but, I mean, let's be honest here, we're picking games at the... Sometimes it just is what it is. Next, we've got a battle between two intriguing NFC teams as the San Francisco 49ers head to Detroit to take on the Lions. I call them intriguing because I don't necessarily think either team is that great. I think Detroit's going to be bad this year, if I had to be honest. And I think San Francisco is decent, but I'm not as high as them on them, as a lot of people I've seen. I believe NFL.com power rankings had them, you know, relatively high. I don't think they're better than realistically any team in their division, but I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I said Denver would make the playoffs last year. You never know. Either way, 49ers going to be without wide receiver Jalen Hurd with a knee in this one. Two D linemen listed as well. Kinlaw is going to be doubtful with a knee, and questionable Kevin Givens also on the D line. Emmanuel Mosley listed as doubtful as well. Lions going to be without tackle Taylor Decker. A whole heaping of players here listed as questionable on the defensive side of the ball, though. Michael Brockers with a shoulder. Levi Onwuzurike with a hip. Nick Williams with a shoulder as well. And A.J. Parker with a shoulder. I think it's intriguing. I want to see how they feature a guy like Trey Lance. There was, you know, teases that they would be working him into this offense, and kind of is him slowly taking over the job is usually the way how these things work. Ask Joe Flacco how that worked in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. I don't know. Detroit's going to play host in this one, but I think these teams are relatively close. I'll give the edge to Detroit. It feels like a really weird pick. I'm not very, obviously, as you can hear in my voice, very confident in this one. I don't know. This is really a pick 'em for me. It's a game that I don't think is going to have too much impact on the season, other than the fact that one of them is going to be picking relatively high, if not both of them. Our next 1 o'clock kick is between the Minnesota Vikings and the Cincinnati Bengals from Cincinnati. This is going to be a big one, as Joe Burrow coming back, you know, making his second debut, so to speak. Bengals going to be without corner Trey Waynes, who I believe is a former Viking. Vikings going to be without offensive lineman Christian Darrisaw and linebacker Anthony Barr. This game's in Cincinnati, and as much as I think it'll bring that sort of edge with Joe back out there, I'm going to go with Minnesota. I think Minnesota's just, you know, more potent on the offensive side of the ball in terms of their skill position players. I like Dalvin Cook a lot, Adam Thielen, and, you know, I think Kirk can pull this one off on the road against the Bengals team that's, you know, going to be happy with the sort of year the Chargers had last year, if we're being honest. Next, we've got one of the spicier games tomorrow. The New York Jets head to Carolina to take on the Panthers. Now, you might be asking, why is that spicy? Well, you might not have been listening earlier, but I'm talking about the fact that Sam Darnold is the former Jets quarterback, and his first game as a Panther is against the Jets. Panthers going to be without wide receiver Shea Smith in this one with a shoulder. Jets without DB Sherrod Neesman with a hamstring. Questionable for the Jets, two on the offensive side. LaMichael Perine with a foot in the backfield, and wide receiver Keelan Cole with a knee. I'm going to take Carolina to win this one at home. I think having McCaffrey out there along with Robbie Anderson, if this game gets shootoutish, they have much more firepower than the New York Jets. I've liked the little smattering I've seen of Zach Wilson, you know, the highlight cut-ups and all that, but preseason doesn't necessarily show you all you need to see at the quarterback position, especially, as I said last week, with teams still trying to feel out how to approach the three-game preseason. Give me Carolina to win this one, perhaps a little bit because it'd be embarrassing to the New York Jets. Next, we've got, and I mean this sincerely, a potential Super Bowl matchup in Week 1. The Arizona Cardinals head to Tennessee to take on the Titans in our final 1 o'clock kick. I say that because, as you know, I'm very high on the Cardinals, and I'm just about as high on the Titans. The Titans going to be without linebacker David Long in this one. Questionable two on the offensive side. Wide receiver Josh Reynolds with a foot. Tight end Tommy Hudson with a toe. A big one, their kicker listed as questionable with a groin injury as well. Cardinals without wide receiver Antoine Wesley, who I don't imagine would have featured an exorbitant amount as well. And linebacker Dennis Gardeck. This one's huge. I'm actually going to be locked in on this game if I'm being completely honest with you. I think the Titans win this one, but I think it's close, and quite honestly, I'm giving it to the Titans because they're at home. I think in Arizona, it might have been a little bit different. I think the Titans are going to run the ball, and I think we might see Julio Jones pop up behind the defense, a little backyard football alakazam over their head for a deep touchdown at this one. I'm going to be excited to watch the Titans this year, and I think the Cardinals are going to be good, but I'm more excited to see the Titans. Obviously, the big addition for the Cardinals being J.J. Watt could be a huge impact on the pass rush, but it's always more exciting when a star receiver shift teams, you know, start to see how that works out. That's just my opinion. As we shift into the 4:25 slate, we've got four games there, starting with another playoff team matchup as the Cleveland Browns head to Kansas City to take on the defending AFC champion, almost a defending AFC champion, Chiefs. The Browns, long list this week on the injury report. Without offensive lineman Michael Dunn with the back and linebacker Tony Fields the second. Questionable, you know some of these names. Jadeveon Clowney listed as questionable on the D-line. DB Grant Delpit, DB Ronnie Harrison Jr., their kicker also with a hamstring, and wide receiver Odell Beckham, as well as O-lineman J.C. Treader, both with knee. Chiefs going to be without Austin Blythe on the O-line with an abdomen. Questionable, two big names on their defensive side. D-tackle Derek Nnadi with a hip, and D-N Frank Clark with a hamstring. A lot of injuries might shake this one up a little bit. With this many Browns players on the injury report on the defensive side of the ball, makes me a little bit less confident even in Cleveland, and I already had the Chiefs winning this one. Give me Kansas City to start this year like they start most years nowadays, 1-0. Matchup of Alabama QBs comes next, as Tua Tagovailoa leads the Miami Dolphins up to New England to take on the Patriots. Now, this one's interesting. Dolphins, questionable, just one player, Preston Williams at wide receiver. Patriots, out, Malcolm Perry at wide receiver. Questionable, Nelson Agholor, big acquisition for them, might not go in week one. Linebacker Ronnie Perkins and DB Jalen Mills as well. Now, last season, I would say, hands down, the better team was the Miami Dolphins, but I do think the Miami Dolphins were helped by a bit of the fluky. They had some lucky plays, they had some weird fumbles and things like this, and obviously there's skill that comes into play in certain things and converting the fluky into wins, like they did. But I wasn't super impressed in what I saw from Tua Tagovailoa. Tua versus Mac, let's see how it goes. We've seen multiple Alabama former players that played receivers say they'd rather go with Mac than Tua. Is that recency bias? Perhaps it is. But I'll take their word for it, and I'll take Mac to start the year 1-0. Next, we got the Denver Broncos heading to New Jersey to take on the New York Football Giants from MetLife Stadium. Questionable for the Broncos, DN Bradley Chubb. Giants going to be without Evan Ingram, who suffered an injury in that final preseason game. Questionable, but reportedly will go, running back Saquon Barkley. Also questionable, DB Adoree Jackson, who was a big acquisition for them. I mean, big is a relative term for a team, you know, wasn't that great last year. This is an intriguing one. As I said, it's going to be a big year for Teddy Bridgewater. It's a potential year for Denver to kind of, you know, see where they are. With Barkley back out there, I'm kind of intrigued for the New York Football Giants. But that being said, it's still early in the season. I haven't been super high on what I've seen from Danny Dimes so far. I'm going to take Teddy Bridgewater and the Broncos to win this one on the road. Next, we have our final 4:25 kick, and it hurts me to say this with that, knowing that Drew Brees is retired and knowing this game isn't going to be in New Orleans because of the unfortunate circumstances. The Green Bay Packers head to, I believe, Jacksonville? Let's see, where is this one? Yep, they head to Jacksonville to take on the Saints. Packers going to be without DB Vernon Scott in this one. Questionable, D-lineman Tyler Lancaster, and linebacker Za'Darius Smith. The Saints going to be without wide receiver Tre'Quan Smith with a hammy, and DB Ken Crawley also with a hammy. Questionable O-lineman James Hurst with a knee. There's no way I take the Saints in this one. As much as I think Jameis Winston can be an NFL quarterback, and he will work his way into it, and this team will be pretty good, facing the Packers in Week 1 is a big ask, especially facing the Packers in Week 1 without the big home field advantage they get from playing in New Orleans at home. Give me the Packers to win this one. I'm going to call it at neutral site. 8:20 tomorrow, the Chicago Bears, not led by Justin Fields, head to LA to take on the Rams. Da-da-da-da. I know it's the wrong music, but that's my football music. You know, it's the primetime football music. I could do the red zone music in your ear, but that would take a little longer. The Bears, a laundry list on the injury report. D-tackle Eddie Goldman listed as doubtful, and for questionable, it's going to be a long one. Linebacker Khalil Mack, DB Devin Bush, DB Eddie Jackson, linebacker Robert Quinn, wide receiver Darnell Mooney, and the long snapper Patrick Scales. Rams, doubtful, wide receiver Ben Skowronek with a forearm. I'm taking the Rams in this one, and I don't think it'll necessarily be that close of a game. I have the Rams being a pretty good team this year, and I don't have the Bears being that good of a team, especially with Dalton at the helm. I think they'll be mediocre, and then they'll change QBs halfway through the year. Give me the Rams to win this one at home. I don't know how this wound up the Sunday night sort of game. Maybe they thought Justin Fields would wind up being the starter, or that there would be a Bears, you know, starting QB that was more impactful than a guy like Dalton. Maybe the Rams, you know, fudge the Huggies in this one, and they take it for granted. I don't know. I don't see that happening, but it's possible. Give me the Rams at home. Monday Night Football sees the Baltimore Ravens head to Vegas to take on the Raiders. Now, we do not have the injury report yet, as that is the Monday night game, of course, but I'm taking the Ravens either way. I mean, with their backfield little, you know, conundrum, they still have Lamar Jackson. They still have some of the threats on the outside as well as on the defensive side of the ball. The intriguing part for me is with Marcus Peters going down, will this defense be as good? I'm not saying they're the 86 Bears, but I expected their defense to be pretty good in this, you know, this season. I think this could be one the Raiders could steal. All things considered, with, you know, as I said, the backfield issues and the injuries hitting Baltimore this hard, this would be a great game for the Raiders to steal if they're going to make a run this year at the postseason, and if Derek Carr is going to show them, you know, what you want to see from your starting quarterback this many years into his career. The Thursday night football game coming up in Week 2. As you know, we picked the Week 2 Thursday night football game in Week 1, as we don't have a show before then. The New York Football Giants head to Washington to take on the Footballers, Thursday at 8:20, of course. This is an intriguing one for me, because for as much as I said I'm not super high on Daniel Jones, I think that this Giants team can compete with the, you know, the NFC East. They always do. Every team in the NFC East can beat every other team in the NFC East. That's just the way it is. I think right now, and we talked about this before, the power rankings, so to speak, of this division would be Dallas, Washington, the Giants, then the Eagles. That's just my take. I don't know. I think with it being such a quick turnaround, I'm not confident in Ingram's ability to go. I'm also not confident in how Saquon Barkley will be on a short turnaround. I don't know. Because there's also the fact that, and I've said I don't know a bunch of times, and it's based on this. Daniel Jones doesn't lose to Washington. And I'm not saying Daniel Jones is this great quarterback, as I've said many times, I'm not high on him. But for some reason, the New York Giants just don't lose to the Footballers when he's at the helm. I mean, one of the most impressive games he had was that come-from-behind victory against the Footballers that inevitably wound up costing the New York Giants the chance to draft Chase Young. I know. It's bizarre. I get it. But that's where we lie. So, and it's also with Ryan Fitzpatrick at the helm. Will he throw 5 touchdowns? Will he throw 5 interceptions? I don't know. Flip a coin. The smart money in this game is on the Washington football team. And you know what? As much as I want to take the Giants to not start 0-2 for the 50th straight year in a row, it seems, I'll take the smart money, I'll take the football team, and I will inevitably kick myself when Daniel Jones continues to beat them. That brings us to the end of the pick'em portion of our week one episode, episode number 111 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm excited for the season. I hope you're excited for the season. It's going to be a good one. All of them are good ones, if we're being completely honest, but I'm hoping 17 games, things are going to get funky, things are going to get weird. Let's go. Weird's where we go. Weird's where we like it. Things are going to be never before seen, quite literally. So join us again next Saturday afternoon to break down week one, and hopefully not break down my flub of a Thursday night pick. As always, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.